This is CliffCentral.com.
Gareth Van Onselen has a keen eye on politics, and it's only probably one of the more appropriate days available to us to get him on the Burning Platform. It's straight after these very heated and contested elections. Obviously, it's not yet time to talk about the definitive results. Those will only start to pour in later today and even tomorrow. But the Burning Platform is our opportunity to catch up on current affairs. It's brought to you by Nando's every single week. Pumi Mashiko is with me as she has become a fixture on a Thursday, which we're delighted about. And on the line, Gareth Van Onselen, who's currently at the Institute of Race Relations as the head of politics and governance. He writes a weekly online column for Business Live and sometimes for Business Day, and he's been doing all of this since 2010. In fact, you've been busy long before then, too. I'm gonna let you introduce yourself further than that, Gareth, but it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks very much for talking to us this morning. Did you go and vote yesterday? Do you have any over and above the statistical data and the predictions that you guys made at the IRR, do you have any feelings about this election?
Hey, Gareth. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, I did go yesterday in the Western Cape.
Oh, my goodness. Hang on.
Hold on.
This line is terrible. See if you can get it improved. I can't. You know, when Skype works well, it works beautifully. When it doesn't work well, it's a disaster. And last week we had two people on who were superb. The line was crystal clear.
But we also just had Janet on, and it was perfect.
Anyway.
Not even 20 minutes ago.
Improve this.
But, okay, so while we try and get Gareth back on.
What have you looked at?
It's not what I just looked
Pumi
at.
Pumi is such an election nerd. She's been looking at the breakdown in different areas.
You know, Gareth, one of the best things that has happened to me this year, besides the fact that, because elections are like media bumper year,
sure,
right?
Of course. Yeah.
Is the fact that every Thursday morning, I get to wake up at the crack of dawn to be here to run my mouth.
Yes,
about elections. It's been the best thing to happen to me this year.
I'm very happy to hear it. Let's just see if we can get Gareth back on here. Gareth, hi. And maybe we can hear you a bit clearer now.
Hi, I'm...
Wow.
Yeah, there
hey,
we go.
How's it, Gareth?
All right, very good. Now it's much better suddenly. So, Gareth, you guys put out a bunch of data and some info before, when I say you guys, I mean the Institute of Race Relations, before the election, and Ipsos put out other data just before the elections. The two are wildly different, and it's almost like a referendum on whether or not these polls are any good. Are you confident still going in and seeing the first couple of results starting to trickle through about what you predicted?
Yeah, well, look, first of all, I know these are hedging bets that everyone who runs a poll says, but we didn't actually make a prediction on that final day. We said there are 4 days to go. The ANC will probably push up a bit. The ESF will be squeezed a bit. We had the ANC on 54, the ESF on 14, and the DA on 23 on our final day.
Right.
And I think those numbers, the trend lines there were accurate, and it's going to end up with the sort of ANC on 55, 56, the ESF squeezed a bit, the DA on 23, 24.
What would these moves mean to you? I mean, what is the meta story here in terms of those three parties in particular? We'll talk about the others in a minute. But, you know, what's the story from the point of view of the research that you guys have done? And I know you have lots of field reporters, too, which makes it interesting when we look at your surveys. What's happening with the ANC? What's happening with the DA? What's happening with the EFF? Because we get news every day, and it's almost difficult. You know, before, we'd get much less news. Electronic media has made that a lot more difficult to figure out from a context point of view. And it's, of course, up to places like the Institute of Race Relations to help interpret this for people like us. What is the story, according to you and the research that you've been privy to?
Well, look, there are a number of big stories, and then there's some smaller sort of regional provincial stories. But let's look at the big one, and let's start with the ANC, because that's obviously the motherlode as far as, you know, South African politics goes. I think the campaign they ran was devoid of any hardcore appealing message that could infuse its base. Most of them had left, well, not most of them, but certainly the big differential between it having a 50% majority and it not had shifted off away from the ANC under Jacob Zuma. They managed to win some of those back under this idea of Cyril Ramaphosa and hope and renewal. But they didn't manage to win all of them back, and that's what's brought their majority down to sort of in the mid-50s range. And it's a terrible range to be in, especially from an economic perspective, because 55% is just the sort of uncertainty that the market doesn't like. Is it a big mandate for Ramaphosa, or does it show that he's under a lot of internal threat? No one knows. People wanted 60 at the one end or 51 at the other, because then at least they would know. But this kind of range is a big problem, and I think you're going to see that play out in internal ANC politics. It's all going to be on a knife edge. Everything is going to have to be negotiated. These two factions are going to be at each other in the ANC for a long time to come. With regards to the EFF, I mean, that's one of the big stories of this election, is their huge growth, admittedly off a relatively small base, but they seem to have been the one party that's able to eat directly into the ANC's support. And their kind of growth on the back of their radical leftist policies is disturbing for South African politics. I think a lot of the people that have voted for the EFF are sort of more protest voters than actually have an inclination for what the EFF stands for ideologically. Mm. Nevertheless, I mean, you're giving a big mandate to the likes of Julius Malema, and that's a problem.
What about the DA?
Yeah, the DA has got a wide range of problems. I mean, it looks set for some small growth, maybe 23-24%. And that's also a kind of uncertainty problem, just like the ANC has. Internally, it's going to claim any kind of growth as a massive triumph. It absolutely has to do that, because the reputation of Musi Maimane is on the table, and the DA's whole strategy over the last 3 years. But externally, that is not going to be well received. It's a pitiful amount of growth after, you know, 5 years of a decade of ruinous government under Jacob Zuma, and they've just been usurped as an effective opposition party by the EFF. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be a great deal of pressure on that leadership going forward.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the other parties in here, because you see the likes of the Freights Front Plus and the IFP and the ACDP and the UDM and COPE and even Patricia de Lille's Good. All of these make up a little percentage point here or a percentage point there. What is the influence of these tiny parties in the National Assembly and even at a provincial level?
Well, typically the smaller parties make up around 10% of the total voting pool. They've done so in both the last national and provincial elections. They might be set for some small growth in this one, maybe push up to 11 or even 12% if things go their way. Their kind of impact on national politics is quite limited. You know, parties like the DP back in the day demonstrated that you can have a huge effect with a small caucus of sort of 6 or 8 people. The EFF has done the same kind of thing, although admittedly they did have 30 or 40 MPs. So you can make a difference at national level, but outside of the EFF, really, no one's done that for quite a long time in South African politics. Their big ability to be able to influence is usually at a more provincial level, where in certain areas they do better than others. So the Freedom Front looks set to do reasonably well in Gauteng, have a few seats in that legislature. Good may, you know, end up with 3 or 4% in the Western Cape. And if you have two really effective MPs, you can make some kind of impact in that provincial legislature. But they seem to operate, as far as effectiveness goes, more as regional parties.
Now, we saw some interesting data come out about how young people have registered in smaller numbers than in any previous election, and with some insight into voter turnout yesterday, not a lot of insight, obviously, we're still waiting for a lot of that to come through, but 26,756,000 people were registered to vote yesterday. Are we happy with that? Is that a would that be a quorum in a meeting? Would that be enough people? Is that a mandate for whoever does get elected? I mean, if you get 10 million votes, you are essentially the winner. 10 million out of a population of close to 60 million, that's not very convincing.
Yes, no, I agree with you 100%. Look, it depends on your frame of reference. Turnout is definitely going to be lower in this election than it was in the last election. That's a problem. A lot of young people, as you pointed out, are not going to vote. That's also a problem. You want those people to be involved in the democratic process, and they constitute a huge number of registered voters. However, if you take a broader sort of internationalist view, we'll probably end up with a turnout of around 68, 69, maybe 70%. And by international standards, that's actually not that bad. We do much better than a lot of well-established democracies. And the reason for that is we're still in the early days of South African democracy. Those other ones have been around for hundreds of years. And voter turnout systematically drops the longer a democracy has been in existence. So we're actually not bad by a kind of global precedent, but internally we are seeing a kind of decline in interest, a large number of groups that are apathetic and alienated and not taking part, and you don't want that kind of stuff.
I'm curious, just Pumi wants to ask you a few questions, but I'm curious on this note, who would benefit from I went to, and I know this isn't evidence of any kind, but it is my experience yesterday, a lot of old people, not so many young people, and quite good turnout, but then, you know, slow processing. I'm curious about who would be the most likely to benefit from a low voter turnout, and who would be most likely to benefit from young people not coming out in their numbers, as we've discussed.
Right. Well, I mean, as a general rule, the parties like the EFF struggle most with lower turnout. Their voters are the most angry and the most alienated, and so they tend to be the first people to drop out of the pool when it comes to apathy. They're obviously the least likely to vote. So low turnout is not good for the EFF. But if you look at it by age, the EFF does have a slight, it's not as big as the public and the media have made it out, but it is there, a slight advantage amongst younger voters, sort of 18 to 27-year-olds. It has about 5% to 10% more voters in that category than the DA or the ANC. So it would benefit tremendously if young people did come out to vote in large numbers, but that hasn't happened. So it doesn't have that advantage. Mm-hmm. As far as older voters go, it's actually the DA that has the largest percentage of older voters. Around 20% of DA support are people who are retired or over the age of 65. It has a very strong constituency amongst older voters.
All right, Pums, you wanted to ask a bunch of questions. Go for it.
You know what? I'm busy looking at the results as they're coming in and all the various things that people are saying. And Gareth, I'm just wondering, on having been on both sides of the spectrum, having been a journalist before, media in this election has a lot of people have had a lot of things to say about how involved and how non-bipartisan the media has been.
Well,
and
they attempt to be non-partisan, but that's also up for debate.
Oh gosh. Yeah. How much of that has played a role in what we are seeing in these election results? You know, because the media has been very, very vocal about who they do and do not support.
Yeah, do you feel that's true?
Yeah, look, that's it. It depends. I mean, you can't make broad sweeping statements about the whole of the media. If you take, for example, the Cape Times in the Western Cape, which is, you know, Iqbal Survey's personal mouthpiece down there, a man who attempted to openly donate R1 million to the ANC in the Western Cape.
Yeah.
That is a totally flagrant, you know, misuse of what's supposed to be and what historically has been one of the great independent newspapers. You know, the kind of effect that has on voting is probably not as big as it seems, because, you know, Cape Times subscription list is around 40,000 people, and a good 3 or 4 million are going to vote in the Western Cape. So you're not influencing that many people. The real problem is television. Television and radio are the biggest influencers when it comes to the election. I think the FABC has been relatively good in this election. Compared to previous ones, fairly independent and non-partisan. There is a kind of false moral equivalence when it comes to the DA and the ANC that's ubiquitous, but it hasn't been that bad. And radio has been fairly independent, I think, this election. So I don't think there is a profound problem on that front, but there are pockets where some media behave very badly.
Some people, a couple of days ago, which was almost shocking to some of us, is seeing the urgent application with Karima Brown trying to get the EFF off the ballot list, right? That says, and then you've got this person as an analyst on some stations. How much of that, you know, like, Really? How does that then bode for people who are like me and you, looking at what people are tweeting and what people are reporting? How much of that chips away at the credibility of the South African media in instances like this?
Oh, I think it does. I think it does great damage. I mean, the EFF has been profoundly successful in a totally malicious kind of fashion of basically drawing key journalists into personal disputes. Yeah. And I don't think the journalists get sucked in with an intention of then becoming political, but it's an inevitable byproduct of having some personal war with the EFF. Mm-hmm. You start to develop a bias. It becomes very hard for you to be neutral. And the EFF knows this, and it knows how to suck the most vulnerable, the most sensitive journalists into its universe, and it goes after them explicitly and publicly. And I think it does affect their analysis, if not qualitatively, then certainly quantitatively. They start talking about the EFF far more than its actual size would dictate as fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of these people have been tactically used by the EFF, and well done to them, because if these journalists' egos exceed their importance, then obviously they can be used as tools. I'm curious also, like Peter Bruce has been waging this campaign that we've got to keep the ANC strong. Now, to me, that almost seems counterintuitive in some way, because Peter Bruce, I don't think anyone believes he's ever voted ANC in his life. I'm sure pretty much everybody he's ever met has got absolute certainty that he's a DA supporter, but he wants to protest too much. What do you think the effect of people like him has been?
I think the likes of Peter Bruce's has had a big effect amongst a limited kind of market, which is basically the sort of business day universe. It's an important market. It's influential. Those people make big decisions when it comes to money and the economy. The thing about Peter Bruce that you have to separate from the likes of Ranjini Mononsamy or Karima Brown is that he is a columnist, and it's his job to have opinions.
Right.
Those other two journalists write hard news as well, and that's where the problem starts to come. I mean, I don't mind Peter Bruce from a perspective of he puts out a kind of maverick idea and makes people think and forces counter-arguments. Even if you don't agree with him, that's his job. The problem is when this kind of stuff starts to infiltrate into hard news reporting. Mm.
From your perspective at the IRR, I mean, there's been a lot of polarization as well, seeing on the one side how the EFF is and the BLF in particular running this huge campaign that seems to be polarizing South Africans. How does that affect, you know, and permeate into the rest of the psyche going into a new term of parliament, kind of this incredibly polarized way of viewing each other as South Africans, but also as political opponents?
Yeah, it's combative.
Yes, it's totally aggressive and hugely polarizing and very divisive. I think the one thing you do have to be a bit careful of is the kind of Twitter effect, in that, you know, Twitter exaggerates everything and also exaggerates difference. And so if you had to view the political arena through Twitter as a lens, it would seem like a nuclear war between various factions. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always play out to that degree out there, you know, in the different provinces and metros and regions. I mean, the EFF and the DA seem to get on like a house on fire in the Johannesburg City Council, and we don't ever get any reporting on the close-up dynamic that's happening between these two parties there, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, but also the media have a role to play here.
Ways.
And I think that social media just it magnifies this effect. People like a bit of conflict because that's the stuff that gets you clicks, it gets you attention, it gets you reviews, and we like to show that there's a huge problem and that it's so polarized and it's so aggressive. But actually, that's just part of the campaign trail, and once the guys are in the room, they get things done.
No, so I'm not talking particularly with the politicians, you know, because what you see is the lag. It may have a little bit of lag. It may not be as big as it is on Twitter, but what you begin to see on the ground is you see how much more violent people are with each other. If you see in the past couple of years, the way that people are responding in aggravated situations and even some mild situations, how quickly things get out of hand. And you do see it on social media where people are fighting with each other on the streets, and it's just over a burger at a Steers.
You agree with that, Gareth?
Yeah, look, Pums, and I think that's a very important observation. The extent to which it's driven by the kind of binary politics of the likes of the EFF is one thing, and I think there is a bit of that. But I think the primary driver of that kind of visceral anger and destruction of state property and service delivery protests is actually national government incompetence. People have essentially learnt the lesson that if you want to get the national or provincial government's attention, if you want to get the ANC's attention, you need to have some kind of violent protest that burns a train or, you know, destroys a library or wrecks a road. It's completely counter, you know, it's not rational at all. But that is the lesson that the public seems to learn. That's how you get the ANC to come and visit you, make promises, act with some kind of urgency, and it's a very dangerous precedent.
But look, I mean, interesting also that a lot of the reports coming out of Vuani yesterday is we've seen over the past couple of years lots of tension in Vuani, but we never thought that it would react in the way that it did at the national election yesterday, where polling stations couldn't open.
Yeah,
no, and the other story of this election, which has not been written up and which also speaks to your point, is the number of people that have literally died in KwaZulu-Natal from ANC internal politics. I mean, there was a whole commission of inquiry into political assassinations that seems to have done nothing to stem the tide. And a whole lot of promises from Sekile Mbalula and Cyril Ramaphosa and, you know, Bheki Cele, all about how they're going to stop this. But there's just continued unabated over the course of this election. And it's really quite horrific, disturbing stuff.
Gareth, can we return to the elections and what we're seeing come through now? Are there any provincial surprises we can expect, according to the research that you've been looking at? A lot of people are talking about Limpopo and the emergence of the EFF's very strong voter turnout and base in Limpopo. But a lot of people also talking about, bizarrely, the Northern Cape, which really is the ugly stepchild of the country. No one really pays attention to it, even though it's geographically enormous and in population terms very, very small. Are there exciting things going on in KwaZulu-Natal and in the Eastern Cape? Where do you think the interesting stories will come from?
Look, I think the Northern Cape is very interesting. I see News24 has just projected that the ANC will hold on to it, but with a very small majority, sort of 52, 53, 54. The DA had set that as a strategic target to bring the ANC below 50% there, because its kind of demographics are more, you know, suitable to the DA, and it's the Western Cape's neighbor, so its influence can cross the border. But I think that is definitely a prospect for the next election to be one of the provinces to fall. I think KZN is interesting, very interesting, because if you look at the ANC in the big picture, in a kind of 25-year frame of reference, prior to the rise of Jacob Zuma and the kind of ethnic Zulu politics that he exemplified, the ANC did very badly in KwaZulu-Natal. It sort of was in the mid-40s range. It never really got above 50. It had to form coalitions with the IFP. And without Zuma, I think they're headed in that direction again. They might do enough to get a majority in this election, but likewise, in the next national elections, I think KwaZulu-Natal will also be on the table. So in sort of 5 years' time, you're going to have a scenario where there are at least three or four provinces, maybe even five, in which there's a realistic chance of bringing the ANC below 50%. And I suspect, although not satisfying to a lot of people who wish for sooner change, that's the big message that's going to come out of this election.
Gareth, one of the things, and you know, we often have this conversation because he did sit across the table from us, ZACP and what they did, which I think a lot more political parties should be doing, is they went for a particular thing. They went for national and they didn't contest any of the provincial. With the kind of shifts that we are seeing with the smaller parties, do you think with our maturing democracy, we will see some parties deciding to contest at provincial and not national elections? I mean, it would make sense. If I was Patricia de Lille, for instance, I would have concentrated all my energy in contesting the Western Cape, and she would have made a sizable dent, rather than doing both the provincial and the national, and then trying to be in all the provinces too.
Yes, I think that's a very good bit of advice for Patricia Delaw. Maybe she'll take it up at the next election.
She'll be too
old.
Yeah,
look, the ZA, I really like the ZA. Sorry.
Yes, say again. You like the ZACP strategy?
I really like the ZACP because they seem to be one of the very few parties that's actually founded on a set of ideas as opposed to the kind of disgruntled personality of a single individual. I think their problem is they left it quite late in the day, and they probably didn't have enough time to make any real impact, and they're going to struggle to get a seat, I think, in this election. But I do think there is something to their strategy, this idea of just standing on a national ballot, or in particular provinces. I mean, you need, as a political party, to do a kind of full survey analysis of the landscape, to look where the best markets are for you and to put your resources into those markets. This idea that you have to stand nationally because otherwise you're not a real player is quite a short-term egotistical strategy that just makes parties like the Good Party look silly. I mean, it's not going to get a single vote in KwaZulu-Natal. Heavens knows why it's on that ballot, but it feels it needs to do that to show it's big and important. And I think the ZACP has shown you can make some kind of impact if you target your election campaign.
By the way, Good have 138 votes in KwaZulu-Natal as we as we stand currently. So they got some votes, God alone knows from where. But yeah, what a waste of resources. So strategy, in terms of strategy, have any of them really won? I mean, is there any party that can be, and they all will pretend that they've won in some way, they'll all spin it that it's some kind of victory. But strategically, and from your point of view, who's been the cleverest, who's been the smartest, who's been the most strategic?
So the winners in this election on the hardcore strategy front, I think, are one, the EFF. They will undoubtedly grow significantly. I think they ran the best campaign in terms of, you know, posters being the most visual, the most effective, their message being the most, whatever you make of the EFF's ideology, coherent and focused, the best kind of internal party discipline. And I think the other winner is actually going to be the Freedom Front Plus, which again, it's not going to be huge growth. It's relative to a very small base in 2014, but it also had a coherent message. It understood where the weakness was in the market with this kind of flank of the DAs that was disgruntled amongst white voters. It targeted them very cleverly with the DA's own campaign message from 1999 saying fight back.
Yeah,
and it's going to reap some benefits from that.
All right, very good. Well, thank you so much, Gareth, and good luck to you today. Where are you going to be based? Are you going through to the results center, or are you just going to sit at home and check it on the internet? Because that's what I'm going to do.
Yep, no, I'm going to do the same thing in Cape Town.
Okay, very good. All right, thanks so much. Gareth van Onselen is at the Institute of Race Relations as their head of politics and governance. Interesting stuff, huh?
This is CliffCentral.com.